home.
Well, that makes sense.
I can't remember it.
I think so, yeah. Oh. But, I mean, interesting, you know, connection like this, you know, the mind finds them beautiful, right? And so, but I've seen them, physicists sometimes saying, you know, they just reject that because it was such an ugly theory. You know? So, but then again, we do speak of the beautiful as being shapely, right, or something of that sort, right? And then we tie it up with what? Form, right? And form, as form, perfects the reason, huh? The what it is. Huh? The proper object of reason is what a thing is. And that's what Aristotle defines the formal cause. He defines it as a definition of what was to be. So it seems to have a special connection with reason. So if you think as the beautiful as being more tied to form than to end, then you think of it as being closer to reason, right? But I remember talking to Monsignor Dion one time about this a little bit, you know, and I was kind of maintaining that the beautiful is more the object of the heart than of the mind, huh? And I was using as two kind of witnesses to that. One was this word lovely, right, which is a sign of that. And the other is that Dionysius, in the divine names, he takes up the beauty of God with the what? Goodness of God, right? Mm-hmm. As if they belong kind of the same consideration. Mm-hmm. He doesn't take up the beauty of God with the truth, God being truth itself, right? Mm-hmm. But that God is good and God is beautiful, right? How is Augustine again the confession there? Too late have I come to know thee, thou ancient beauty, isn't that the way he says? There he talks about knowing, right? You see? And so, I think you'd find text though, you know, where the beautiful seems to be closer to the heart, right? In some cases, more to the mind. Well, when you define the beautiful at first by its effect, you know, the beautiful is that which pleases when seen. It does have a reference to the mind, right? Mm-hmm. To being seen, to the senses or to the mind, right? But to the knowing powers in general, right? But when you say pleases, right, then it shows a connection with the what?
Heart.
Heart, yeah. And sometimes you say, well, the good is that which pleases. And the beautiful is that which pleases when seen, so it's a particular kind of pleasant, huh? But if you emphasize that it has to be seen, then you emphasize the connection with the what? Mind, you know? And that in the knowing of it, the mind itself is delighted by knowing this, huh? You know? And Brother Mark used to kind of joke sometimes about these beautiful things in geometry, you know? It's too pleasant, you know. It's too pleasant, you know. You can't do too many of these, you know. You get too much pleasure, you know. You got to watch pleasure. See? You know, that's in the Nicomachean Ethics there. Aristotle, you know, gives the three rules there, you know. And one of the rules is, watch out for the pleasant. But some of these theories are so beautiful, you know. But they're beautiful in being what? Known, right?
Mm-hmm.
And someone who's not really into these things mentally doesn't find them beautiful, right? You know, but someone who gets into them, they are beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, you know, one time the chemist, the chemist, he's retired now, but when the chemist assumption, you know, talking about how beautiful these chemicals were, you know, the way they're structured, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and most people would be struck by that, you know, but if you're very much into the structure of the chemicals, and there's a symmetry there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Aristotle in the, I think it's the 13th book of Wisdom, huh? He says the three main forms of the beautiful are order, symmetry, and the in moderation or limit. But order, you know, seems to be especially the object of what?
Mind,
yeah. You know, Shakespeare defined reason as the ability for large discourse looking before and after, right? And you may remember how Thomas divides the knowledge of reason by the order it considers, right? And he gives us a kind of a starting point, what Aristotle says in the Metaphysics, that it belongs to the wise man most of all to order, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he gives us a reason for that, that it's peculiar to reason to know order. So wisdom being the highest perfection of reason, most of all would be able to order things. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
So you think of order as being, you know, central to the beautiful. Then it seems to have a connection with the what? With reason, right? Huh? Which looks for order, right? Okay. But there's a connection between them, he said, because they can be both be based upon what? Form, and form can be the end of what? Generation and so on. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in the second objection there, the second, it should be said that the good is said to be diffusive of its being in the way in which an end is said to move. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be very careful about that, huh? Because we tend to borrow the word move, right? From the third kind of cause and apply it to the fourth kind of cause, huh? So you might say, what moved the leaves? Well, the wind moved the leaves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you're talking about the third kind of cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what moved Romeo to go over the garden wall of the Capulets? Or what, you know, the guy who climbed the tower to get to Rapunzel there, you know. See? We could say her beauty moved him, right, to climb the tower or something, or the beauty of Juliet moved him to climb over the garden wall. Mm-hmm. This is a dangerous thing to do. But move there now refers to what? The end, right? The end is moving you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The philosopher is moved by what? Wisdom to do what he does, huh? But if wisdom is his end or goal, it's moving him not in the sense of the third kind of cause, but the what? Fourth kind of cause, huh? And you know, sometimes we take the word make, huh? Maker, you know, strictly speaking, is the third kind of cause, and the mover or the maker, right? But sometimes we take the word make and we apply it to, like, say, the formal cause, huh? Like I might say, you know, you got a wooden chair, let's say, and you got a wooden table, huh? Well, why is that a chair and this, say, what? Table, right? Well, it's the form that it has, right? That makes it to be a chair or a table. But now when you say make, so you're talking about something like the carpenter, that kind of a cause?
No.
So, or if I say, you know, you take the word cat, let's say. Well, it's made out of the same letters as the word act, right? So why isn't this the word act if it's made out of the same letters? What makes this to be the word cat?
The order.
Yeah. But now you say the order of the letters makes it to be the word cat, right? Not thinking of the maker in the sense of the writer, right?
Okay.
Or the printer, huh? You see? You're talking about a cause in the sense of form, right? The second kind of cause, huh? Includes form not only in the sense of shape, but order, ratio, right? The example Aristotle gives is what? 2-1, the ratio of
for an octave.
Pythagoras, yeah. So we do use the word make sometimes for the formal cause, right? And we tend to use the word mover sometimes for the what? Yeah. You gotta be careful that when Aristotle, you know, is a reasoning, say in the 12th book of wisdom, that God is the first cause, huh? That he's the unmoved mover, right? He wants to show that not only does God not have a mover in the sense of the third kind of cause, right? But he's not acting for the sake of some, he's not moved to do what he does by some good other than himself. See? Because then you have a mover. Not in the sense of an efficient cause, but a mover in the sense of which the end is said to move one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, God is not moved by some end or some good to do what he does. Huh?